You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend. And Tracy, we survived April.
We did. April was 5,000 years long and also a week long somehow at the same time. I don't understand how that happened. It's a weird pocket universe.
It's been terrible. It felt like even though March was a grind, April stepped it up.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that sort of meme format going around about like March was, you know, that 2020 is a weird year because we have 29 days in February, 64 days in March, 374 days in April, and 10,000 years coming in May.
I saw that too.
Yeah. It's gonna be quite a ride. I live in Illinois. I'm outside the Chicago area, and our governor, J.B. Pritzker, made an announcement, about a week ago, that a version of lockdown is going to continue for us through the end of May. They're softening some restrictions, but nowhere near to the extent of other places. And one of the things that goes with it is that schools are not reconvening. And so all the different schools are finishing out remotely one way or the other. And in addition to it, we got a message from my kids' school district that they're cutting off the last week of school and just pulling it all a little bit shorter and a little bit tighter. And this is, on the one hand, it feels like, sure, it's fine, because helping my kids do their homework for the last couple of weeks, I have a pretty good idea of where they are, and I do not know that they would be profited that much by one more week of spending time on Google Classroom. But at the same time, I'm like, oh no, because there's go back to that webcomic name format thing. Oh no, I am not done with my online teaching obligations for another week after the point that my kids are done. So like, what am I? I think I'm going to lie to them. I think I'm going to tell them that school is still on and I'm going to like make up crap. I think the problem is my son's going to be 13 on Monday. Happy birthday, Corwin. And he does have like friends he texts with and stuff. So I'm afraid they're going to blow my cover on this, but I could totally make this work with the 8-year-old. So not sure of the ethics here, but on the work. Ethics is.
That's funny. Yeah, I would. I'm just imagining like, Mom, why did the school want me to mop the floor?
Like, look, this is what we call experiential learning. Everyone has to learn new skills. Don't you understand that the government says this is essential labor?
here in Colorado, Governor Polis has eased restrictions, but he's also leaving it up to individual cities and counties.
Oh, okay.
As to what they really want to do.
Patchwork quilt.
Oh my God. It's so difficult. Like we had a team meeting. We have a team meeting every single day at work, mm-hmm. always on Zoom. And I asked the question, I'm like, okay, so if you, I live in Aurora. Aurora spans three counties.
Oh no.
Two counties are doing the same thing. The third county is doing something different. I'm in a county where they have extended the stay at home order. Where I work is in a county where they're easing restrictions and they're going to start allowing people to do stuff again. My question to my boss was, if I live in a county where they are saying you have to stay at home, but I work for someplace that's in a county that says you're open for business, which one do I follow? And he's like, that's an excellent question.
I guess it's a slightly better possibility for you than if he had just emphatically said, I mean, then you drive into work here where everything is magic and fine, obviously. I think the fact that he was at least willing to go with, I don't know, means that there's still room for thinking this through rationally. Oy. You know, one of the things that you and I talked about, for a little background here, for folks, we had originally we were going to have a guest today, and that guest unfortunately has lost her voice, not feeling as great as she would like to be.
Not COVID. Stressed that it was not COVID.
Not COVID. Super not COVID. Just voice went, and I have great empathy for that because I'm cursed with ordinary colds, knock out my voice for several days at a go, to sometimes hilarious effect. And so, anyway, I did want to take a moment to plug Corey Lee. Her debut novel, Weave the Lightning, has just come out, I want to say in the last month. I'm pretty sure it's out now. And it's a Russian-inspired fascist state fantasy. So sort of like, I don't know, imagine like everything that was awesome about Genevieve Valentine's Mécanique in a traveling circus kind of context with a certain like Leah Bardugo Ravka kind of thing. Anyway, Corey Lee was going to be with us, and we're looking forward to rescheduling her at a future date. But that left us kind of punting and saying, okay, if it's going to be just us, because this was all a little bit last minute, what can we talk about? And one of the things that this kind of like scrambling for rationality in the weird context of COVID and being sequestered and such has made me notice is I and everybody I know is suddenly turning all of our social media into sort of like food porn. Basically, like we keep sharing, like, this is what I made for dinner. And like, here's my gorgeous bubbling sourdough starter. Even people who I never thought of as particularly into cooking. And Patrick, if you have ever followed his social media, you know, does share food stuff a lot.
And I've done that. I did that before COVID.
Yeah, you were an innovator, really. I mean, you were ahead of the curve. I don't mean to lump you in with all of us who are just catching up to you here.
I'm just saying, like, it's like I always struggle. What should I post on social media? I've always posted about food. Like, I have always done that.
If you're living right and living lucky, it happens every day. So you know, that's not a bad place to go. So I said to Patrick when we were like, all right, so Corey will have to visit with us another time. I'm like, you know what? Let's talk food. Let's talk food and fandom and the psychology of food in fandom and as a comfort experience and as world building and SFF and all sorts of stuff. And so that's kind of what we're going to geek out about today. And I'm psyched.
I am too. I like you said, I've always posted about food. I've always cooked. And you know, it's a comfort, it's a control thing. You're in control when you're cooking. Like it's your own little world that you are. It's just like writing. You're creating something. Except in this case, your characters aren't talking back to you and telling you what a horrible thing you're doing to them.
No. Unless like me, you cook for children. In which case, you know, you get, it's a little bit like cooking is like always having to be on Goodreads when you cook for a family. Like you don't want the number one piece of advice they give you when you become a published author or among those pieces of advice is please don't keep checking your own Goodreads reviews. Yes. And most people make the mistake of doing that for a period of time until they just realize that madness lies down that road and they give up. Unfortunately, it's like being forced to always get the Goodreads reviews when you have to cook for a family. But you know something about that too, I'm sure.
I do. Yeah, I always joke with my mom, especially that I, as far as cooking for her, I'm just going for edible. If she'll eat it, I've succeeded. As an example, last night I grilled burgers and hot dogs, and I had a little pre-made spice packet thingy for burgers, and I used that on the burgers, and stupid salty.
Oh no,
that thing was so salty. I was like, holy crap, never using that thing again. But it was funny because I gave her her burger, I started eating my burger, I took a bite, and I was like, oh my god, so much salt. The face that she made.
This is where I regret that this is a podcast.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And it's kind of funny because she wouldn't, I'm like, I'll just make us something else. No, she's going to eat the burger and she's going to make the face with every single bite so that I understand that I screwed up.
Yes, this is your
hilarious
punishment.
Yes.
That's amazing. I think going back to what you were saying about control, that I think, part of the reason right now where we're seeing so many people get so much more into cooking. It's certainly like the, well, I'm stuck in my house, what else am I going to do? Like you get to feel a little bit virtuous, I think, if you're cooking for yourself, even if it's nothing particularly spectacular or innovative, you get to feel like I have done a thing, I have been productive, even if the rest of the day was like a couple of obligatory Zoom meetings and sort of pencil pushing and then you and Netflix getting cozy. But I think also it's a comfort place psychologically. Like it's self-therapy. Like
it is.
I do not understand what is happening with my world. And this is true, like put COVID aside for a minute. Like one of the things I do when I have had a super crap week is I know lots of friends who, when they have a super crap week, they're like, I am going to put up my feet and order something and have it come in. I tend to go the other direction and like, I'm going to make a vast and articulated feast because it is my way of like yelling at the universe and saying, you will obey, you will give me what I want, I can shape you to my will. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's energy too. Like most of my cooking used to happen on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Because by the time I got home from work, and usually now I have to do some stuff to take care of mom. I have to help her do X, Y, and Z. And by the time I'm done with all that, it's really late. I don't want to cook. So I will reheat something, or I will order something, to your point. But on the weekends, I'm home. I don't have to go to work. I don't have to do all these other things. So I have more time. I have more energy. My brain will start to go towards what can I make? What do I have? What's in the fridge? And I will cook. And it tends to be more elaborate, like you're talking about, right? Because yeah. Now I've got the time, I've got the energy, and I've got the drive to do something a little bit different. Right now, as we're recording, I have chicken breasts in the slow cooker with a mixture of Sweet Baby Ray's honey chipotle barbecue sauce that I mixed in Worcestershire and Italian dressing.
Oh, okay.
So I make a little mixture of that, and then I smother all the chicken breasts in that, and I cook that slowly for 8 hours, and it just comes out as the best barbecue chicken ever.
That's great. I've got chicken marinating for the grill for later, and I'm going to be grilling that with some zucchini and some asparagus. It's marinating in a white wine herb thing. And then I'm going to do some new potatoes with like a butter, parsley, salt and pepper sauce thing. I'm probably going to bake some bread to go with it because my daughter doesn't like potatoes. I'm going to give you a moment to let that sink in. What monster doesn't? I think when the fair folk came and took my real baby, because I come from Irish stock, so good Lord, she doesn't like potatoes, all this, and replaced her with a puka. They were like, ha ha ha, she will learn someday that this strange mutant child doesn't dig potatoes.
I will give you hope. Yeah. I did not like potatoes for probably the first 10 to 12 years of my life. And I am also Irish.
See?
I would not eat them. And then eventually I started eating them. Like I used to have in my bio, to be honest with you, I used to have in my bio on websites that I didn't like French fries. Because I didn't. I did not like French fries.
It's an attention getter though, right there.
Yeah, but suddenly something happened, and I started eating, when I was a kid, I started eating fried potatoes, mm-hmm. And then I discovered baked potatoes, fully loaded baked potatoes, and I started eating those. I still didn't really like French fries. I liked fried potatoes, but not French fries, until much, much later in my life, and then suddenly I discovered that not all French fries are McDonald's fries.
Ah, that is critically important.
Yes, I discovered seasoned fries. I discovered steak fries. I discovered curly fries. I discovered that there were all kinds of different kinds of French fries, and suddenly I liked French fries. So I think there's hope.
See, we spent all this time in the United States of America worried about gateway drugs. Really, we did talk about what are the gateway potatoes. if we're really worried about what's ultimately going to compromise the health and well-being of the people of this nation, maybe you're in Colorado, they stopped worrying about marijuana a long time ago. But But come on, man, the gateway potatoes are really the thing that we need to think carefully about, because they're a carrier for so many things, all that sour cream and butter and stuff and vegetable oils and things. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the potato lobby, they might be out there trying to generate these addictions. And there we are wandering the streets, rubbing our arms, looking for the next hit.
Well,
with a salt shaker in the other hand.
I'm gonna blow your mind a little bit here. Coming from a Southern family, one of the staples in our house, beans and cornbread.
Sure.
So, you know, this is you slow cook beans. You soak them the night before. You get rid of all the weird crap that floats to the top of the pan. And then you start slow cooking them, usually with a ham hock. Mm-hmm. And you slow cook them, and then you make your cornbread. And there's two ways to make cornbread. You can either fry it or bake it. Depends on your mood. But that would be a staple in our house because you just have this gigantic pan of beans, and then here's the cornbread. Everybody sit down and eat. I hated it. I thought it tasted like crap. Occasionally, they would also make fried potatoes with it. Mm-hmm. So on the nights that we would have beans, cornbread, and fried potatoes, there I had to eat something, and they're trying to make me eat this, and I didn't want it, and I yeah. just wanted nothing to do with it. So I introduced ketchup to the mix.
Ooh, again, you're ahead of this curve.
So here's what I would do, and this grossed out everybody in my family, and most likely it's going to gross out everybody on the podcast who's listening. Including my co-host Tracy, but I used to take I would crumble up cornbread in a bowl.
Oh God!
And then I would cover that in ketchup, and then fried potatoes, and then beans, and then I would stir it all up really, really well. And I'm making the stirring motion right now because this is radio. But I would stir it out that all up, and I would eat it that way. And that's how I could get through beans, cornbread, and fried potatoes.
Patrick, how have you lived this long? there's got to be major long-term consequences for these choices. God. My brother was definitely team ketchup on everything growing up, like ketchup on green beans, ketchup on cooked eggs, ketchup on... he was team ketchup
to this day. And it's funny because during this pandemic thing, I've been texting with various people. Giles from Beyond the Trope and our friend Jeremy, we've played games before, board games and Dungeons and Dragons and different things. So we've been texting quite a bit. And they sent a meme over, something about grilled cheeses and tomato soup. And if you eat a grilled cheese with ketchup, you have no soul or something like that. Like the devil took your soul as a child or something like that. And I had to admit to them, to this day, I still eat grilled cheeses with ketchup.
I know people who do that, and it's not my move. But I can see how it's sort of tomato soup adjacent. Mm-hmm. I think of it as like a really thick kind of, oh my God, I'm blanking. The hell is it? Like it's like a tomato gazpacho is what you're really kind of trying to do here at this point. So I guess you're bringing up Giles and Jeremy makes me think about kind of like food and fandom, to kind of circle this back around to mm-hmm. some geeky stuff.
Sure.
Because I think a lot of, in ways that are completely obvious and in ways that aren't, a lot of things in geekdom are very food adjacent. If you go to a con, you know, there's always people sort of live and die, sometimes rather literally, depending on cleanliness and abundance of food that will or will not promote scurvy, by like the con suite available mm-hmm. foods and various things. There are so many properties in SF that lean really hard into food, either as like a background set piece or as sort of culture and world building. And there's so many ways that we gather together in community. Like there are lots of, if you go to Philadelphia or if you go to, San Francisco, if you go to New York, there are so many different events put together by different science fiction book reading clubs and that CIFWA sponsors and various other things, where it's sort of like, you know, brew and reads and things, you know, and coffee shop culture and stuff. I know that when my husband and I first got married and we had our first house, and we would every other week have people play D&D with us in our big cool basement, one of the big set pieces of that would be what I would make for dinner. And I would usually do a crock pot meal, because there would be like six people coming over, and that's just the way you feed six or eight people at a go, especially if you know that you're going to be downstairs playing the game and just need to, in the midpoint of it, run upstairs and have something ready to serve. But there was also something about the fact that it was a crock pot meal and that we were playing D&D that made it super tempting for everything to be like uber rustic and as like the inn of the last home feeling meals as I could possibly do. Like, I worked very hard to try and find some way to replicate what I thought the flavor profile from the Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman Dragonlance books of Otic spicy potatoes that they make such a big deal of as being like the signature dish at the inn of the last home. And I did. I figured out how to do it. And so now they're like the standard breakfast potatoes of Shea Townsend. And I'd make different stews, and I would do like different soups, and I would bake breads, and I'd do like big cheese boards with meats and nuts and, you know, berries and things like that. And so I guess for that reason, it really kind of resonated with me when I started seeing, or at least noticing, more and more SFF stuff kind of leaning hard into food as a set piece and food as sort of like a community builder, or as like a space where critical interactions happen. You know, like so much of the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire universe is sort of built around the culture of food. And so... I just kind of keep coming back to that.
I think it's just, it's who we are. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's always bugged me, especially with hard SF, is it's like, I get it. Okay. In order to get food to the astronauts in space, it has to be powdered or dehydrated or whatever. Like, we do all this stuff to get food up to the International Space Station. And so when people are writing hard SF, they're like, oh, food's going to be this thing and it's going to be really difficult. And so in order to have enough, and it's going to be high in protein and high in blah, 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 blah. And so it's always this, you know, mush that you add water to, kind of thing. Like that's, yeah, that's this thing, but that's not who we are. That's not, yeah, who humans are. Humans, everything comes down to sitting around a table and having a meal, right? Yeah. What are the focal points? If you go to buy a house, or if you're, you know, if you're talking to a realtor, they always talk to you about, oh, and here's the kitchen. And look, there's plenty of room. You can have a gathering here. You can have
a double wall oven.
Yeah. Sure. You know, they always focus in on the food aspect of it, because that's again, that's who we are. Right now you're talking about the COVID stuff. There's lots of things on TV and online about how people are having virtual meals with their families. Yeah. Because again, that's what brings us together. So I always have found it difficult to look at a lot of the SF out there, not necessarily fantasy, but the science fiction aspect of it and space stuff, where it's always this reconstituted mush stuff, because that's not who we are. That's not what we do. As soon as we can, like if we're in space, as soon as we can, we're going to be cooking. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be cooking real food. Because that's what brings us together. It's one of the reasons I've always liked The Expanse, is because they make a point of the crew of the Rocinante, they cook. One of
the first things they do in the first book is they strive really hard to make a credible lasagna.
Yes.
Like it is a project that they are just committed to. And I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, growing up in a Southern household, my mom and my grandmother, they cooked all the time. One or the other was cooking. And it didn't matter who you were. If you were at our house at dinner time. You sat down with us and you ate. My friends, if they were at the house, they got fed. Mm-hmm. It was just a thing. And it always blew me away when I would go to someone else's house where they didn't do that, where it's like, oh, it's now dinner time, Patrick, you need to go home.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, well, it smelled pretty good.
Yeah. I would always go in my head, I'm not saying anything, but in my head, I'm going, wow, you guys are cold.
And I think it's, and I going back to the idea of like the sort of, cause not to get mushy about it exactly, and not mushy in the same way you were talking about, but there's kind of like a spiritualness to mm-hmm. what food does for us. And thinking about science fiction, two television series that I think approach the idea of food and space very differently, and I think how they make that approach is actually emblematic of what they are as series. Firefly versus Star Trek.
Yeah.
In the Star Trek universe, you do sometimes see these, like, especially when there's a meeting of a delegation of one particular, sapient group and another sapient group, you might see elaborate dishes and things, but there's rarely a sense, especially when those meetings happen aboard the Enterprise itself or another ship, there's rarely a sense of them being sumptuous or welcoming. And it's because we know that somebody just said, computer, replicate this Bajoran dish. And so the functionality of the technology is, on the one hand, really wondrous. But on the other hand, it sort of unplugs the characters and us as consumers of the story from the experience of what food can mean. And flipping the script in a completely different direction, one of my absolute favorite things about the pilot episode of Firefly is that when Shepherd Book ends up asking for passage on the Serenity and bargains his way on, what he ends up partly bargaining his way on with is a share of a very small crop of fresh food that mm-hmm. he's brought from the Abbey where he yep. used to live. And there's this wonderful scene of Kaylee sort of with a sensualness, which we're meant to see as utterly sensual, sort of drawing a large strawberry out of a little wooden box and eating it, and just her eyes rolling back, and just, you can tell as everyone tucks into this meal that they haven't had anything like this for a really long time. And later episodes, you do see them with the sort of like, here is the green protein carbohydrate mush. Mm-hmm. And there is the kind of sense of everyone enduring that and sort of resenting it. But also at the same time, there's the sense that the alternative of that is going to be shown and is going to be acknowledged as what everyone would prefer, as opposed to both Earl Grey tea hot and the Great Bajoran Feast, all produced out of talking to the computer, being treated as more or less functionally equal. And I think it's a great... Both of those are world-building tools.
There,
you know, the one in the Gene Roddenberry style Star Trek universe. Don't come for me, nerddom. they're coming! Oh God, I can hear them already, and the episode hasn't released yet. Although I have something to say about that as well.
Execute Order 67. Take out the podcast hosts.
Take out the co-host who makes the stars. Wrong star, Townsend. The thing about the Star Trek universe is it envisions a imperfect future, yes, but certain elements of the imperfections of our present world have been smoothed over. Like, there are interspecies conflict, but we're not seeing within a species racialized conflict, right? Food scarcity isn't a thing within the Federation. And why isn't it a thing? Because we've got this crazy technology. And the impression is that it's not just used on ships, but is used elsewhere as well. And, you know, the Firefly universe is much grungier, much sort of roll up your sleeves, space Western kind of thing. And I think that's part of the reason why, I'm sure it must exist. There must be a Star Trek cookbook out there. But if there is, I'm not interested in it. I do, on the other hand, have, as a gift that I got from a friend, the Galaxy's Edge Black Spire Outpost cookbook, which was for Star Wars. And Star Wars is a totally different world where food is concerned.
Yeah, it is. But I will throw it out there that, like, you don't see a lot of food in Star Wars.
You don't. When you do, I think they go to extremities to try and make it seem as alien as possible. Like, yep. Everything is blue and purple, and there are, constructions. Yeah.
As you can say, Jabba grabbing the live thing from the swimmy bowl and, you know, stuffing it in his mouth.
Yeah, and there. So, and to be honest, you see some of that kind of aesthetic reflected in this cookbook that I'm talking about here, where there are a number of recipes where they're like, and now put in 15 drops of purple food coloring. Like, it was guacamole, now it's purple. Like, and we're going to call it this other thing. And that's, on the one hand, it's sort of silly, right? But it's also about the escapism. It's part of how you kind of open the door that has this sense of like, okay, I'm connected to this world because food, but also, oh, look, it's purple. It's the reason why when we're in kindergarten, almost everybody had that unit where the teacher's like, we're going to make green eggs and ham today. And like, it's just freaking green food coloring, right? But the story takes us away and the whole idea is like, because there's something that transcends the normal there.
It's funny because when I was working on a space opera, so I wrote a space opera no one wanted to publish. But when I was working on it, I had these kinds of thoughts in my head that we're kind of talking about right now. The idea that food is something that, as a species, it's our comfort, right? It's what we gather around. It's what we do. And so I wanted to have food, real food, in space, in the space opera.
Yeah.
But I was, this is something, it's like a couple hundred years from now. I was trying to do things that I thought were different, but the same. I was trying to put together different kinds of cuisines that I thought were just weird enough that they could be quote unquote science fiction-y, right?
Yeah.
And I remember going, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to create something called Mexican sushi.
Okay.
And so it was going to be sushi, but with like Mexican flavors and spices and different things. And I was like, man, this is something no one's doing. I guarantee it. And then I thought, well, I'm going to Google it just to be sure. Sure as shit, someone's doing Mexican sushi. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't an original thing. But that's kind of the point, right? We do these things and we're totally going to take them into space with us. It's just going to happen.
Well, and what you're talking about there, like people who are foodies call that fusion cuisine, right?
Yes,
where it's
yeah.
like, oh, look, Korean tacos. It's yeah. basically bulgogi, but we're going to, you know, serve it out of a taco truck and put it mm-hmm. in a tortilla. And so we do things like this and we call it fusion cuisine. But what we're really saying there is that we're negotiating cultures together. And yeah, when we get to the point that we find ourselves out in space, through a combination of hanging on to our cultures and necessarily melding with others. And who knows if there are other sentiences and sapiences out there that we could interact with that have stomachs and need to eat stuff like we do. But one of the first things that would end up cross-pollinating is food.
Mm-hmm.
And would be a means of making connection. Just that fundamental idea of like, hey, we are basically meat furnaces that need to cook stuff inside of ourselves to keep running. Like, want a meat furnace together for a while? Which sounds completely horrible when you say it that way, but would probably be a better way. That whole idea, the reason in Song of Ice and Fire that the Red Wedding is so shocking is not just that everybody dies, although that's a big part of it. It's that so much is made of Catalan's effort to like, no, you, I need you to demand bread and salt as soon as you get in the door. Because once you do that, it's like home base and we're okay because there are rules. And much is made of these rules. And it is not just the extremity of the violence that's done, but the fact that it becomes known that bread and salt were given and yet the phrase did the thing that makes it so shocking, even to the people of that extraordinarily bloody world, where even they sit up and take notice and go like, he did what? He dishonored the laws of hospitality?
Mm-hmm.
Shit, man. Like, that's a thing. It's really, it's interesting because we codify into our food so many different things about what it means to be a person and what it means to behave. You know, the whole idea of, like, in some cultures in our world, it is complimentary to leave a bite of your food uneaten, because it is a gesture of, you know, showing that you're not over consuming. It is a gesture showing appreciation for the work that was done. For other places, if you were to leave some of your food uneaten, the assumption would be that you didn't like it, or that you were rejecting it. And so there's so many psychological pieces that sort of circulate around food.
What's the one in Japan where the more noise you make, the more compliment you're giving?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it unami or unagi? So if you're slurping and you're making lots of noise, to people in the West, that's horrible and rude, and what the hell are you doing? But there, the more noise you're making, the more you're slurping, that means you're enjoying the food, and that's a compliment to the chef.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it goes even down to, like, the family level of dynamics. Like, when families get together, and once we get back to our form of normal where families are getting together, so that, you know, people are bringing dishes and, you know, over to grandma's house for whatever the event is. Like, there are rules. Like, you're coming to grandma's house, don't bring the potato salad. Aunt Nini is going to bring the potato salad. You do not step on Aunt Nini's potato salad or whatever it is. That there are spaces of a meal that are staked out by family tradition. This is the daughter who's going to get the recipe for this thing, or the special lamb cake pan or what have you. And it's just all about sort of like reifying who we are through food. And I guess that takes me. Do we want to do the Thunderdome thing that we were talking about before?
Sure.
This is sort of, this will reify us through food. So to catch you, dear listeners, up to what I'm talking about here. A long while back, sometimes John and Patrick would do a thing where they would be like a pick one, where they would name polarities of things or name groups of things, and they would make each other or guests choose from impossible seeming choices.
Five questions.
Yeah. Or different questions and things. And so I, as a variation on this, I had wanted to play with Corey Lee because her book has the whole idea of lightning magic, a game called Thunderdome, where she would have to choose between you could only have one, X or Y, which is it going to be? Because, of course, two things enter, only one leaves. So I was thinking food Thunderdome. And so I'll start with some low-hanging fruit here. Patrick, pie or cake?
Pie.
Okay, see, I would go with cake. Do we need to talk this one out?
Sure, if you want to.
Okay, all right. So make the case for pie. Why am I wrong?
I prefer pie, and I prefer pie for lots of different reasons. I don't like frosting. The buttercream, super sweet, nasty as shit frosting. Like, I don't like that.
I don't either. And so my cake answer hinges on the idea that I don't have to have buttercream, and there's lots of great cakes out there that don't involve that horribleness. Mm-hmm. My problem with pie is it all hinges on the crust. If a good crust versus a bad crust for me is a total deal breaker on pie. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's burned, or if it's like a brick, or, you know, if it's doughy and you feel a little bit sick to your stomach because you're not sure if it cooked all the way through. Like, there are so many ways that crust can go wrong. Whereas with cake, as long as you don't give me buttercream frosting, I'm gonna be happy.
Yeah, so if you put a cream cheese frosting on a cake.
Oh yeah, sign me
up. I like that.
You could put cream cheese frosting on a shoe, and I would be like, hello, I'm here for dinner.
But I prefer pie. So, you like, coconut or banana cream, either one of those, I'm there every single time. I'll throw out a Midwestern thing, and I don't know if you do this or not, but this is something that my family has always done. I will do apple pie, but with a slice of American cheese on it.
I know that that's a thing, but I have not yet tried it myself. So we'll see. I can try and do that maybe for like a special like patrons, maybe for the patrons only broadcast that we do, I will Zoom myself eating cheese pie.
And, one of my grandmother's favorite things in the whole wide world were the hostess pies. Remember the hostess pies?
Yeah, yeah.
So she would get those. She would get a hostess apple pie, and she would she'd put that in the microwave with a piece of cheese on it, and just heat it up enough to melt the cheese, and then she would eat that.
Hmm. Well, I mean, sweet and savory, man.
It's sweet and savory, and I know that it freaks people out. I don't know. At one point, I feel like I looked it up. It's definitely Midwestern, potentially more South.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That seems like it's probably got Pennsylvania Dutch roots to it somehow.
Potentially, yeah.
It seems to me like the Pennsylvania Dutch are sort of like anything can be fixed with more mayonnaise and pickling. Seems to be sort of like pickle it and put mayonnaise on it is sort of like the Pennsylvania Dutch way. All right, do you want to Thunderdome me on something? Fair's fair.
So you did cake or pie?
I did cake or pie.
Oh man, now I'm blanking that you put me on the spot. So okay, here we go.
Okay,
here we go. Yeah. This is I might be tricking you. Barbecue or grilling?
Oh, see. For one thing, we have to sort out that this is not an idiomatic difference that we're talking about here, because there's definitely places in these brave United States you can go where when people say, I'm going to barbecue you some food, they just mean they're going to grill you a burger. Yeah. Okay. Barbecue or grilling? I'm going to go with barbecue, because what I'm thinking of is like somebody with a smoker and like pit roasting and things like that when you say barbecue.
That is correct.
One of my rules when I love two things, like I'm at a restaurant and there's a menu and it's got good stuff and I'm trying to choose between thing A and thing B. And I learned this trick from my husband, who is very much like all about synergies and sort of narrowing stuff down and making pathways to solutions and things. I am not like that. I am just a sort of ball of chaos. But anyway, he said, like, look, pick the thing that you enjoy, but it's too much work for you to do at home, or you know you don't have the tools to do it at home. And so that's why I would go with barbecue. Like,
that is, yeah.
Yeah, I have a grill. I can grill me lots of stuff. But to do barbecue of the sort that, like, you go to a barbecue restaurant, I do not have those tools. I do not have those skills. I do not want to risk $50 of meat on bad choices, you know, with less than the skills necessary to do it right at home. So I'm going to pay somebody $20 at this place where they know what they're doing and get what I want.
I agree. I enjoy a grill out. And usually when you're grilling, that's a very social thing. You can have a lot of people over. You can grill. To your point, it's, you know, you throwing on chicken kebabs and burgers and hot dogs and brats and who knows what else. That's grilling. Barbecue it takes more time. It takes more effort. It's a longer process, and that's something that's very difficult to do at home.
It's true.
You can do it. You can buy all the stuff. You can get a smoker. You can get all that stuff, and you can try to do that yourself. It's interesting because I had posted on Facebook about chili dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that post, but I was basically saying if you're going to make a chili dog, do you cook the hot dog in the chili or do you cook the hot dog separate? Everybody unanimously said you cook the hot dog separate, but everybody had a different way of cooking the hot dog.
Okay.
The one that stood out to me,
grill. Yeah.
Yeah, the one that stood out to me was Beth Cato. Are you familiar with Beth?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you've ever run into Beth at a convention, she almost always has food. She almost always has some sort of baked.
She has a wonderful blog, isn't it? Bready or Not, I believe.
Yeah, she almost always has some sort of baked, ooey gooey goodness that just makes you want to buy every book she's ever written just to support her.
Beth Cato is actually the gateway drug. Yeah.
Yes, and so she talked about cast iron skillet, butter, and you cook your hot dog in that, and then when the hot dog's done, you take the hot dog out and you put your bun in there.
Okay,
and
toast the bun, sort of.
And toast the bun in the butter. That reminded me of the Paducah dog. So As longtime listeners know, my mom's family are all from Paducah, Kentucky. And they will also tell you that there is only one place in the entire world where you can get barbecue, and that's a place called Harnad's. It's Harnad's Drive-In in Paducah, Kentucky, home of the Paducah dog. So this is the place where they will put all the meat in the smoker early in the morning. Sometime around lunchtime is when things start to become ready. And if they run out of meat, they close. Because they only have so much meat, because they started it in the morning and that's it.
Yeah, it's gone now.
But they do other things like the Paducah dog, which is, I believe they make it the way Beth talked about. Mm-hmm. I believe what they do is they cut the hot dog in half. And they cook it in butter, and then they also, you know, toast the bun. And what they do is they use a hamburger bun, and they put the split hot dog on the hamburger bun with chili and cheese. And I think they also cook that for a little while once they've assembled everything. It is horribly bad for you.
Oh, yes.
And oh, so freaking good.
There's a when I went to DePauw University, which is in Greencastle, Indiana, for my undergrad, and there's a place there called Marvin's. And Marvin's tagline is Marvin's delivers. And when students would like it's basically a greasy spoon sort of place, and you'd go and they'd do burgers and fries and things like that. But they were famous for the GCB, the garlic cheeseburger. I'll talk more about that in a minute, but when like students would travel and go overseas and like do study abroad and stuff, the deal was you were just understood through the social compact of being a DePauw student, supposed to take a picture of yourself somewhere holding a sign saying Marvin's delivers to, and then wherever you are. And then you bring that picture back. And so the entire interior of this place, which was sort of like a re-outfitted trailer of sorts, was... It had all these signs. It was like Marvin's delivers to St. Petersburg, Marvin's delivers to Paris, Marvin's delivers to Tenochtitlan, like you name it. Like they had hundreds of them everywhere. And the garlic cheeseburger was served on a home-baked French roll. So the whole thing was probably about 7 inches long and oval shaped. And it was actually two patties. If you ordered a garlic cheeseburger, you were going to get basically two burgers. And it was a burger patty that was a cheeseburger. And it was served on an extremely salted garlic bread bun thing. And by default, it came with no other toppings. Now, you could ask for a GCB with bacon if you wanted. If you asked for a half a GCB, then they would make one of those and cut it in half. You only get one of the halves. But I swear to God, I am probably going to live 10 years less than I otherwise would have the number of GCBs that entered my body during that four-year period. And I have zero regrets, none, not a one. And again, it's the equivalent of the Paducah dog. Like, you know, as it's coming towards your face, you're like, I will someday pay for this. And you're like, it's like it's the barrel of a gun in food form. And you're like, welp, this is fine. This is fine. I've lived a good one.
Well, believe it or not, we've been talking for almost 50 minutes about food. I'm sure that everybody listening is now ridiculously hungry.
You're welcome.
As you can tell, Tracy and I love to talk about food. We also, I've noticed like your Facebook is a lot of food. My Facebook is a lot of food. Mm-hmm. So yeah. If people are interested in that, they should go check us out on Facebook.
Yeah. And I tend to, because again, social media laziness being what it is, I tend to clone all of my Facebook food porn onto Twitter. So
nice.
If you're not a Facebooker, you can go on Twitter and get the same experience with slightly fewer words.
Very cool. All right. Well, I want to throw out there that if you enjoyed this episode and you like what we do, you can always go to patreon.com/functionalnerds and back us, become a backer. There's lots of levels, lots of cool things that we will give you in exchange for you backing us, including Tracy is offering to do some short story critiques up to 2,000 words. So you can get all of her expertise as not only a published author, but also as someone who teaches about science fiction, fantasy, and writing. So I think that's worth it. You should go check that out. Tracy, any final thoughts for people before we go?
I think that a good goal for yourself this week would be to plan a meal for yourself just as a treat, whether you are living alone or have other people to share the meal with. But plan a meal for yourself that you're doing to please no one but yourself.
Nice.
Reward yourself that way. I highly encourage it.
Breakfast burritos it is.
Good call.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Functional Nerds Podcast. If you're looking for other great podcasts to listen to, I recommend Beyond the Trope. They premiere new nerdy episodes every week. Giles and Michelle have piled up over 7 years worth of interviews with best-selling authors, award-winning actors, and other leaders in the creative community. And even though, I mean, they've sincerely disappointed me by not coordinating a meet and greet with every dog they know, their Patreon supporters and fans love them for keeping their weekly episodes short, sweet, and full of laughs. Check them out over at beyondthetrope.com. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a backer of the show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have all new levels with some fantastic rewards like access to our patrons-only Facebook group, exclusive extra shows and content like the new video podcast, Just 10 Minutes, book giveaways, yep, we're giving away books, and even short story critiques provided by Tracy every month. If any of that sounds good to you, again, visit patreon.com/functionalnerds. This podcast is copyrighted by the Functional Nerds under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. To learn more about the Functional Nerds, visit functionalnerds.com.